Hi, welcome to This Property Live podcast. My name is Mark Winship. I'm a property investor, coach, and mentor. As you will know by now, we like to talk to inspirational people on the podcast about their adventures in property, and this week is certainly no different. I'm delighted to be joined by the crazy talented Rob Revilius today. I've been dying to hear about some of the super exciting projects that he's been working on over the past year or so, but I'm also really keen to find out where it all started for Rob and what first attracted him to a life in property investment. I know that you're going to love this episode, so without further ado, let's hear now from Rob Revilius. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks. How are you, Mark?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you. It's been a long time in the offing, this, for me. I've been dying to catch up with you. I know we've sort of missed each other, haven't we? We've tried to schedule in an opportunity for you to jump onto the podcast, but calendars just haven't aligned quite right. But I've been looking forward to catching up with you. I know you've got some really exciting stuff on the go, but you're a busy man. It's been already quite a busy 2022 for you, hasn't it, so far?
Yeah, no, it certainly has. It's hard to believe it's halfway through the year. And the date and going, I should be doing more of that. I got round to it with all the distractions that go on.
How quickly it's going. But yeah, tell us a bit about some of the projects that you've got going on at the moment, because it would be great to, I know you've got such exciting development stuff on, and then maybe we can sort of take it back to the beginning and find out where it all started. But tell us what you've got going on at the moment.
Yeah, so we've just come to a close. We're in a kind of a transition period, I guess, for want of a better word. I formed a JV, or longer story short, really. I moved up to North Norfolk in September, October 2019. I then created I met another dad at the school who was developing in the area already. He was very much doing a project at a time, finishing that project, getting on to something else, and I was doing a bit more scale. So we just kind of we had some collaboration there, and we kind of got together. So by March 2020, we brought two projects, and he already had legacy projects with him at the moment. So we've gone from nothing to kind of having three projects on at the go, and also creating a brand under Ilex Homes is how we evolve the brand, and over time we've been kind of growing that and getting a bit more presence and starting to feel the benefits of that as well.
Yeah.
But the two projects that we brought in that March period, one was from another developer who already put a scheme on it, which we didn't like, so we kind of readdressed that scheme. But that was an old care home, about 6,500 square feet, which we then put into four freehold semi-detached houses. It was an old Victorian buildings. We've got a bit of an eye for Victorian conversions and how to really bring in the flow. Certainly Will, who's got a very good eye on that as well. So we converted in four houses. So we bought that in the March. We applied for planning. Bearing in mind, we're kind of forming new teams all the way through this. And, you know, I'd say certainly as a kind of mentor in a masterclass that the stronger your team, the more you can do, you know, the more you can rely on them. And that's certainly the case that we, you know, we've kissed a few frogs along the way, and that's part of the fun and that's part of the frustration. So we applied for a conversion of the scheme and improved it. And that took like 5 months or so.
Yeah.
In fact, on that project particularly, the developer was a bit rough and ready, and the scheme that he had put on basically was based, the measured survey, you know, the footprint of how all the walls are, was based off the old fire escape plans from like the 80s.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't that necessarily that accurate, which proved a few.
Back of a fag packet exercise. Yeah,
basically, sketch scheme, it'll be fine. So we kind of changed around that and took on a builder who was fantastic, who was willing to work with us. And we really we started there in about the September, finished in the summer of 21. You know, obviously in October 20 is when the COVID pandemic hit. So that was a
point. I was going to ask you about that. What impact did that have on progress, and what challenges did that throw up for you?
Well, when purchasing it, obviously everyone thought we were mad, and we were, we weren't actually concerned, going back to memory, like the scheme, the heritage scheme that Will came with him, we were a little bit concerned because it was higher value and we thought that might be affected. But our model is middle of the bell curve, you know, go for the average of the area. So we knew there would still be a market. So we weren't overly concerned, but everyone else would thought you were mental, of course. So we kind of cracked on. As far as problems with building, of course, a few long lead items became longer, but it didn't prove a massive headache. Our builder was very much on top of it. Our builder had a great relationship. It was the main contractor, and they had very good relationships with the suppliers, so they knew what was coming down the way, so they would stock. Yeah. And then also they're in a cash position that they can stock up, and obviously we're good with payments, so that whole mechanism worked very well. So we sold it in the August, and it obviously all depends on where you are as far as what your sales prices are, or you know what your 20% uplift is. But effectively, out of that conversion, we made £500,000 profit.
Amazing.
Which was healthy. At the same time, we had this other project, which is an old cottage hospital. We're doing a lot of stuff on social media with that one. Yeah. You know, beautiful, beautiful detail to the whole building. Great history. 1866, it was born. It was built, and there were subsequent extensions. We went to the archives and got the history behind it, and saw the floor plans from 1903. You know, and really understood the layout. You know, managed. There was rumours of ghosts and various other bits and pieces and where the mortuary was, but we managed to put that to bed, so to speak. So we managed to find it was actually off-site. So I was thinking about developing in that area, but lost that opportunity. But you know, it was a far more complex scheme than a straightforward freehold, because we're talking flats, we're talking multi-levels, we're talking about big walls coming out. So again, we kissed a few frogs with architects and whatnot and designs, but the scheme, the first scheme the architect came out with was good enough, and then we've improved it along the way. And some of the flats are really bring out the features, the historical features, like the old lift wheel is still in existence. It's backlit, lit with some glass glazing, double glazing in front of it. But essentially, you know, we've really put our heart and soul into it. And as far as we, you know, ultimately we visited that project maybe once or twice a week. You know, it wasn't overbearing. But we've had good impact. We have got a good relationship with the builder. Slightly different to the previous builder. A bit more variation orders, if that makes any sense to anyone. As far as they're a little bit more. They needed a bit more reining in with the contract and a bit more detailing with the contract. So that's certainly a lesson we've learned along that process. But that project, we're still in the sales phase of that at the moment. But we've completed and handed the keys over for three. There's another three remaining, some sale agreed. But that should deliver about £1 million profit between the two of our companies. And then similarly, this old restaurant in the local area.
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
The Will legacy project that Will had, that was a conversion of a big building, thatched, which cost quite a lot to replace that thatch, like £60,000 or so. And that went into two kind of luxury apartments, about 1.6 million GDV. But that was about £300,000 profit. So fabulous. That all in a year without being too stressed is certainly, you know, and feel free to obviously look at the photos around the projects, but it's about understanding the detail and having the right people in place.
Yeah, fabulous. And it's I've seen some of the stuff that you've been putting on social media and some of the video tours. They look absolutely amazing. It's really inspiring stuff. And I think so that was a was that a chance conversation in the school playground, was it, that's essentially led to all of that?
I'm sure Rick says it quite a bit. Yeah, TTP, isn't it? I think I very much believe in goal setting and knowing where you're going to end up and stuff. And certainly when I first came up to North Norfolk, I wouldn't have imagined where I was now. Certainly through the education, and the network, you can embrace, you can undertake anything because you understand the fundamentals and you just progress it and you do it organically. And that's certainly been my journey. I probably overuse the phrase organic, because it's been a solid foundation. You build onto the next stage, the next stage. Oh, can I undertake that? Okay, it's a little bit of a stretch, but okay, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I'm sure some.
Yeah, and it's about your team then, isn't it? And I've written that down while you were talking there and underlined it, because what seems to be coming out loud and clear is the importance of your power team, the importance of having the right power team around you. Ultimately, we can't know it all as investors. That's not our job to know it all. It's about surrounding yourself with the right people so that as and when you're looking to take things to the next level and scale, you can do that with the confidence that, you've got the right people around you. That seems to be coming loud and clear from what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I probably pride myself to be quite a relaxed individual, I think. Yeah. Have a good life balance as well, being able to spend time with family and go and do fitness and all that stuff. And you're not going to achieve that if you're a control freak and, you're not reliant on people. You'll be stressed out and you'll be worrying about materials. You'll be worrying about, people turning up on site, being let down left, right and center. Whereas we're very much, it's a bit of a silly term, but it gets the point, the high value tasks element, let's think on a different plane. Okay, absolutely, you need to understand the fundamentals of each role, the general building terms or whatever it may be. But once you've understood that, once you've cut your teeth on that, progress very quickly to that, well, can I get someone, I understand the fundamentals of it, can I get someone to fill that role? That will allow me to go and, find the deals and find the money is essentially the crux of it. But obviously make sure that the project's running smoothly and have some kind of accountability through that. For the size of the projects that we're doing, roughly speaking, 10 units and below, we feel we could comfortably, not being stressed and still having the life balance, run 4 to 6 of those projects a year. At the same time. And that's all through having the right team and just having the workflow and neither one of us are, we're not stressed, but we do face issues. There's a thing called nutrient neutrality that's happening in our area at the moment. The restriction on planning and can delay things about 18 months. It certainly was down in Southampton and Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Where you invest in, and it's all to do with overnight stays. That's just been introduced. When that came out, it was a blanket ban on planning, and you just go, oh, it's fine, let's find out the details, let's not overreact to it yet. And then what does that actually mean? And then you look at the look for the opportunities and everything, rather than, as Mark, you would be more than aware, when teaching some people just negatively focused. You're like, well, actually, there's opportunities in recession. There's opportunities, all of it.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was going to ask you about your take on the current market and the, there's lots of talk in the mainstream media, and it's a noisy place at the moment around, the potential market crash and, all these kind of emotive terms. I was actually talking to Caroline Claydon on a podcast session this morning, and we were talking about exactly that, what is the right time to actually invest? And I think if you are solution focused and if you're someone who is wired to see the opportunities, then the right time is always now, because there will be a strategy, there will be a way to pivot and be successful within whatever the market cycle is at that time, isn't it?
Definitely. You know, and my view on this is obviously we've had the last 3 years of boom, you know, unexpectedly, you know, when things slow down, the like for like comparison against those 3 years is going to be negative in some people's eyes, you know, and then obviously the press have a heyday. But but, you know, say we've got these three units and they're premium products for the area, as in, you know, there's £400,000 for a 2-bed flat. For a holiday let or Airbnb, you know, our plan B, we've always, and as we teach our students, always work with a plan B. So in the plan B, if they don't sell, we know they'll sell for the right price in a given time. If we have to do an interim in plan B, which would be service accommodation, we could mortgage those. So we're then still taking out profits of 75%. So on that project particularly as well, after the sale of the third unit, it paid all its way. So we still got three units of profit. So we can extract our profit through a mortgage on that. Yeah. Still earn an income through Airbnb and wait 3 years until the market comes back. Great. In the meantime, it's very exciting because there's going to be, you know, now's the point to negotiate with vendors because everyone else is, the viewings are dropping off. People are worried. They think there's a massive crash because they're reading the press as well and they're not getting the feedback. Brilliant. You know, there's opportunities.
There's hesitancy in the market, properties sitting on the market for a little bit longer rather than what we faced over the last couple of years of, you know, 20 people turning up to every viewing and it's sold before you can even get there. So that's all going to shift, isn't it? And there's opportunities there for us as investors. So it's being able to see some of that.
And I think the key thing for us as investors now, you know, there's the two paradoxes, isn't there? Either lots of time and lots of deals and no money, or no deals and lots of money.
Yeah.
And we're just transitioning from there. So all the work that, you know, property investors do now to build credibility with lenders and have a, you know, whether that's SaaS, whether that's private investors, you know, these different sources or even institutional lenders, that when we go into lots of deals, you know, more, you know, as Warren Buffett says, there's more millionaires made in a recession than any other time. So, you know, all the work that we put into now, building relationships with lenders, potential private investors or whatever, it's all
for absolutely. So take us back then. So you mentioned a couple of times about things growing organically. So I'm sure these big sexy developments weren't where you started in the investment world. So, you know, what was life before property? How and why did you get into property in the first place? And kind of how did things start for you?
Yeah, kind of potted history. So I guess, so I've been at it, I guess, properly for 5 years, but I've been doing it 15 years, you know, same the case as most people, as in, you know, as far as your amateur buy-to-let investor, amateur landlord. So we were living down in Surrey, not north, not where we are at the moment. And I was, I kind of progressed through my career, typically being business development stroke sales, ended up in oil and gas, you know, kind of did an engineering degree as a mature student, really kind of worked hard, all of that, faced a bit of stress through that actually, because I overloaded myself with doing so many courses plus working full time. And there was a time, with my oil and gas job, I was tied to airports because I was in and out of the country about a couple of weeks in a month. We also, around the same time, sold a buy-to-let that we had. You know, we bought it for us effectively, as in, you know, we bought it not with an investor's head on mind. And then it was like a glorified bank account, really, at the end of the day, but with loads of admin issues. At that point I was like, well, there must be a secret source to this whole thing, and much like everyone who's listening to this probably went on that quest and went, well, is there, where, you know, what is that secret source? I know there's an answer to this. So, and then kind of embraced in education, and started really kind of absorbing it, and then really taking the networking part, you know, just kind of growing those relationships organically. I wanted to move straight into HMOs from that point. We had a pot of money around 100, just over 100k. and I wanted to move into HMOs or just have one or two, or typically you go have one or two buy-to-lets and that would look after me for pension, and that, you know, we all know yeah. £3 per month, that's not really going to, you know, do much for you, even if you invest in the right area. But my kind of mentors went, no, you need to go and buy to let. So I was like, no, HMOs are buy to let. HMOs, you know, and they're, okay, I'll go. So I went from Surrey to up to, you know, traveling up to Merthyr Tydfil.
Okay, yeah.
Love the place up there. You know, you do fall in love with your investment areas, you know, because you get under the skin and they kind of will work for you. And that time I was, you know, on the time that I was back in the UK and had a young family, we bought a camper van. I'd drive up in a camper van and then on the night off go and, you know, go and park on a beach and then go and paddleboard and wake up in the morning, paddleboard, and then go and view some dirty, rotten properties. it was, you know, trying to make the most of the situation and try and embrace it. So, kind of cracked on with that and started having some success through that as well and started growing my portfolio. Then I was like, right, I've got enough to really focus on HMOs. That's when I had a kind of infield mentoring bit on HMOs and started investing in Macclesfield as far as HMOs. And then kind of continued doing that. And then that made me financially free. That was within about 18 months. I was able to leave the job, obviously not on the same salary that I was getting paid, but gave us flexibility. That also gave us flexibility for my wife to pursue the career that she wanted, to look after 72 teenage girls and their parents, as in a girls' boarding house. Dream. I am for sure. But anyway, so and then she came up to North Norfolk, and I said, I was quite good at interviews at that point. And then I said, well, you put your best foot forward and go and get offered the job and then come away and say no, but then go and choose the job you want. She fell in love with the place, of course. I was like, that doesn't make my life any easier. She got offered the job and we ended up in here. So then, you know, kind of feed on. We're in North Norfolk in a place called Holt, and we're a good 4 or 5 hour drive to my investment area. And I kind of looked around here as far as what would work, you know, and I looked at kind of King's Lynn and Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft and Norwich, HMOs, surface accommodation, and just trying to settle on, you know, in all the basic training, everything we teach,
yeah,
we do as well. You know, it's the grossy, you know, it's the low end, it's the basics that will allow you to be successful. So did that. Anyways, bumped into this other dad. We both seen this project, started talking, one of the projects, and went, right. It was in auction and some of my auction skills came into play there. And also negotiation. We kind of had discussions with the vendor, and that was the cottage. So we kind of just, as I say, kind of rolled with it, you know, going, well, now actually, you know, the sum is greater than its parts. Certainly he and I, of course, we're going into a new JV and there's that whole, you know, working with someone approach, but that's gone very well. You know, there's been very little tension, but there has been tension, you know, but that's all part of, well, where's our goal? We both are aligned with where we want to be. So work well, and we definitely have our own areas of responsibility. And also, you know, sign off. So, right, you have ultimate responsibility there and I have ultimate responsibility here, but we take opinions on both because we both benefit from that. So
would you say that's key to a successful JV is having that understanding of who brings what to the table and who's going to be responsible for which parts of the process?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and there will be gaps, I'm sure, but you kind of fill in and also trying to, you know, if you feel the other person's in pain, that's where you go for the high value tasks. You know, you don't want to be ultimately find money, find deals is the crux of it. But in order to allow you don't want someone who feels that they're working harder to, you know, and it becomes a bit of a dysfunctional relationship. So certainly when, you know, utility providers and that kind of stuff, or social media, just try and get people to do that. And that's where you kind of progress. So you're just making top level decisions. We're clear, you know, and I think take the ego out of it as well. I've seen some very successful relationships where, you know, the ego is out there and you can just have a rational discussion. Oh, this is my opinion. Okay, and ultimately, you have a decision. Fine, that's fine. You can. I support you with that, and we'll see how it plays out and then maybe learn from it.
Yeah, because it's about relationships, isn't it? At the end of the day, that's what's going to sustain all of this. That's the bedrock that you're building it on, isn't it? So you're actually proactively managing those relationships, whether it's with a JV partner, whether it's with your power team, is going to be crucial. But it's really interesting listening to you talk. And I do find this actually I'm lucky enough, obviously, to speak to quite a lot of investors as part of the podcast. And the people that I see that are really doing the big stuff and really scaling and going on to some exciting things are the ones that have been able, that, you know, you've followed the same path, the same process that we teach other students to follow. And just maybe the slight difference is the way that you see opportunities where other people might see hurdles, if that makes sense. So, yeah, you know, being in Surrey and investing in Merthyr Tydfil, I mean, you know, how many times are we met with the, you know, the resistance that, oh, it's, you know, it's too far to travel, I don't have the time, or there's no deals in that area, it's too competitive. And, you know, whereas, you know, you've looked at exactly those same challenges and just sort of reframed it, flipped it, and thought, well, actually, I can combine that with a bit of family time. You know, I'm gonna get my lifestyle goals to knit into nicely with my investment goals, and suddenly those things that were barriers actually just become part of the life, as it were. But when you see those opportunities, when you train yourself to see opportunities where other people see roadblocks, that's where the magic happens, isn't it? Really, that's where you start those opportunities.
So many levels as well, you know, as far as not being stressed, you know, turning up with the right attitude, attracting other people to you that, you know, are similar minded. Also, you know, you've been an observer to other people in the negative and just going, right, steer clear of them because they're just going to suck the life out of me. But I just think you see so many more positives that way. And I think that's more, it's not maybe a natural trait, but it's certainly brought out by the people you're around, but also the books that you read, you know. And I'm a massive advocate, you know, all that constant stuff of retraining your brain through reading every night, positive, you know, the development books. Then you're surrounding yourself with the right mindset, the right people, you know, Arnie Schwarzenegger, you know, Sly Stallone, those kind of people that have really done fantastic things and really broken the mold. You know, it's all in our head of, oh, you know, you should be doing that. We all have lack of belief or imposter syndrome about every stage we do, but so is everyone else. So why not you, kind of?
Yeah. And I think people will find that really empowering to hear that, you know, looking at some of the deals you're doing and stuff, the fact that, you know, you get those same feelings. I know I certainly do. And I think that's the beauty of, well, that's certainly what we're trying to achieve with the podcast, but I think the whole community really is around, you know, warts and all, you know, let's just be, you know, have some integrity around this and be honest about, you know, what it's like to invest in property. And it's not all you know, roses and just a clear highway to the top. It's, you know, we all face the same challenges as we go through, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, everyone has, you know, we're all doing something new, aren't we, essentially? So you're always going to believe, well, it's not for me. And you always have a self-image or self-impression or an impression of those people who are in it, already doing it. But it's largely wrong, you know, it's all guff. Because we're all, you know, it's just a mindset thing, you know. You'll be able to undertake certain projects. It's just going, well, you're allowing yourself to do that rather than listening to other people. Because I certainly relay this with my students, you know, largely most of society won't believe anything until they see it. Where the key thing for me and, you know, people's success, I think, is you've got to believe it before you see it, you know.
It's create it.
But yeah, don't expect the support of those around you. Just seek out those, as we talk about, those who are doing it already, those who have been through it. Everyone's, no one's born into this, I don't think. Well, maybe the odd few, but.
So knowing what you know now, rewinding the clock 5 years, would you do anything different?
I don't have any, you know, being positive, I don't have any regrets as far as, you know, all my life is a rich history of mess ups or learnings
that have led you to this point, though, right?
Yeah, no, then I'll probably, you know, coming back to that earlier point, I'll probably do that self development. Way back when, I always thought I want to find a mentor, and I always felt that I lacked a mentor.
Okay.
Yeah. Early on, but I was searching for that rather than undertaking it, you know, and I was always taking courses. But had I got into property development earlier, would I have been ready? Maybe, but I think certainly in order to be ready for that, to do the reading, you know, all that personal development, surround yourself with the right voices, books, whatever. That you know, and who knows where my path is going to be, whether it's going to be bigger, smaller, whatever it may be, you know, I reach a level. But I think having that opportunity mindset, and that goes for the whole of life, not just, you know, earning a bit of money through property development, you know, that's just it's a very fortunate gift, I think. You know, the money, the profits that we earn now are, you know, aren't relative to someone who's working in the day-to-day career. So it's all kind of relative there, but certainly with the reading and personal development stuff and, you know, being surrounded by the right people, I think that's the key,
really. Yeah, that's great advice, particularly for anyone just starting out, I think. So what's next for you? What have you got? And I'm sure you've got stuff in the pipeline. What have you got coming up?
Yeah, so we've got a lighter shift, of course. So bearing in mind that we entered into a relationship and we had three projects and we managed those successfully. Will was pretty much hands-on on the legacy project. So we know we've got a bit of spare capacity there as well. So we've got three similar size projects. So we've got one care home, 8,500 square feet. So basically that translates into a 2 5-bed townhouses, Victorian townhouses. Three flats and a quirky thing out the back, two beds, quirky thing out the back. So we're just out tendering for that at the moment. And we should have start on site in the next 5 weeks.
Yeah.
GDV wise should be between 2.85, GDV being gross development value, the total sales value, depending what the market does, who knows, you know, that should be 2.85 to about 3.2, who knows.
Yeah.
And then we have a plot of land very close to us for four Shelley bungalows. We bought that very well. It hasn't got planning on, so we're applying for planning on that. But that, again, that would be around the 2.8 million GDV mark. And that would be our first proper experience on new build, which is completely different from conversions because it's a clean site. You know what, apart from out the ground, you know what you're working with. So it's... That should be a very interesting project, and we're really designing the scheme to be quite unique. It's not a high density scheme, so it's, you know, spacious. Each one is on quarter of an acre plot of land. And we know for that one the sales are so strong. We know that product particularly is in massive demand. The estate agents who we work very closely with, an estate agent who do a lot of social media, but they know if they get that on their books, people on their books will sell their place in order to get into these ones. So that's a really strong proposition. And then we've got this grade two listed property in Norwich. Again, 8,000 square feet. It's got a new build opportunity in the grounds, but that's so grade two listed is a bit trickier. This one that we thought might be affected by nutrient neutrality, but in fact, we've just got an extension on planning and we're not going to create any more overnight stays. So that's a really exciting project. And that thing is around the 2.8 million GDV. So effectively, we aren't working that hard this year. So we're on the quest to get another three more active projects this year. We do feel that with this nutrient neutrality, you know, when we're talking about problems, this ban on planning for any more overnight stays, that also lends it the opportunity. Not only have we got the project now, but now there's a massive lack of supply for builders, for architects, for everything. So we could easily sell that on with planning gains, or we could build it out and realize there, but also buying opportunities. You know, there's a lot of options that we can create because there's going to be a lot of frustrated landlords. So yeah, so we're just starting to become active to get these other projects, and then we hopefully what we're looking at is 50% growth year on year on profits. And how to achieve that, you know, it all comes down to the fundamentals. Now, something that always perplexed me is where you hear developers go bankrupt. Now, that shouldn't be possible, in as far as if you're buying right. Yeah. You've got 20% margin. The market's never corrected more than 19% in any given period, and that's only over a short term. The why, you know, it's a cash flow thing, or you know, or they bought the wrong project, or they're taking finance on when they don't need it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're always buying right, then you know, and that is going out and not just relying on the agents. It's doing the direct to vendor stuff. It's creating relationships. It's creating options, it's de-risking projects, then there shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear you say that, because when we're working with students who are maybe just starting out and we're talking to them about cutting their teeth on some smaller projects and buy-to-let stuff, whatever it might be, you know, inevitably, you started with HMOs, we started with HMOs, you know, inevitably you'll get some investors who are itching to move things quickly to the next level, but the principles are the same. What you learn about how to structure a deal and how the buy, refurbish, refinance process principle works for something like a buy to let, it's amazing how that same process, I'm doing my numbers, there's more numbers, but I'm doing the numbers in the same way for hotel developments as I was doing little multi-lets. So like you say, you're just following a sensible principle, a sensible process for investing, which, you know, kind of safeguards you against a lot of these kind of market uncertainties and the stuff that we hear inflicting other people.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I recently got called very simple. the way I approach things, you know, it's just like, well, it's this, that, and the other, and that's it. And it essentially, as in my world, it is. It's like, okay, you go and find a deal, and you know, you only buy it when you know you make your 20. So for developments, you make 20% margin, but that's often different if you're looking to buy to lets.
Yeah.
You know, factoring the build costs and factoring contingencies, it's all very top level. And then you can get involved in the detail during the due diligence type phase, stage, survey, subject to builder's inspection. And then negotiation comes into it.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's all fundamentals, no matter what stage, you know, and people who try to build it up to something it isn't.
Brilliant. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. I knew it would be. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. It's great to hear about some of the projects that you've got going on and how they came about, but also how you sort of you grew to that point. And I think it's going to be inspirational for a lot of people to hear. Not only, I think, you know, it's nice to hear that there are opportunity if you follow a process and you do build things organically, that there's an opportunity to maybe explore or stretch your creative legs a little bit more with some projects. And the fact that you come across as so passionate about some of the developments you're doing and the beautiful buildings that you've got the opportunity to convert. And I think a lot of people get into property envisaging themselves doing something like that further down the line. So it's kind of been really useful to hear how you've got to that point and how you've scaled up to there. So if people do want to sort of follow what you're up to and keep in touch with you and see how you're getting on with these latest projects, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so normally we go under the tag of Ilex Homes, ILEX Homes. That's more of a, it's not a money raising thing, it's more of a brand building thing. But yeah, follow that. Definitely, you know, you'll get an idea of what we're up to and what's coming. We love it, you know, and we're, you know, any engagement, if people are around and they want to visit sites, just reach out. Awesome. And we can possibly make that work. So but no, Mark, always a pleasure spending virtual time with you. Drink at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. No, that would be really good. Yeah, definitely. We'll get that in the diary. But thank you so much for your time. And I will speak to you again soon.
Top man. Thanks, Mark.
Take care, Rob. Cheers. you can't help but be inspired by some of the big sexy deals that Rob is currently doing. But do you know what? I'm personally just as inspired by his pragmatic approach, his commitment to keeping it simple. And isn't it exciting to think that you too could be doing deals like that if you follow the system and follow the same well-trodden path? To find out more and to connect with the likes of myself and Rob and hundreds of other property investors from newbies through to experienced veterans, why not head on over to the Property Wealth System community page on Facebook? And if you've ever found yourself curious about what some of us actually look like, then go and check out the Property Wealth System channel on YouTube. You are in for a treat, I can assure you, with the content that is. Please give the podcast a follow or a subscribe on your platform of choice. And if you get a few minutes to leave us a quick review, that will make it even easier for others to discover the podcast too. Thanks again for listening, and I will catch you on the next episode.